Yeah. So how have you been?
Well, I've been perfectly fine now since I got this business together in my mind. I have been with the communion thing. And it's quite real. I mean, whatever it's about, Don, quite real. I just don't know for certain if it's what it seems to be. And I keep saying this on the air because people are jumping to the conclusion that a thing like this must be UFOs. But it may not be that. It may be something in a sense more wonderful. I say in the book that I keep returning to the human side of it, because even if it does involve visitors from another planet, the part of it that's important to us is what happens to us and how we feel about it and how we react to it. And that's what the book is about. It's about reacting to the unknown, really. About living with the unknown.
Can you be more specific? What is this? I started reading the book, and I said, what is Whitley saying here? Are these events real? Now, somewhere in your persona, having written the Wolfen and, mm-hmm. and the Hunger, there had to be a sort of a bizarre relationship to
yes.
that which is not real. But here it seems to manifest itself in some real ways. And so as I began reading, I said, I can accept the horror novels, which in some respects you have put behind you, but is Whitley putting me on?
Is it an elaborate... Is this a novel, basically, is your question? Is this a new kind of novel, a novel that pretends to be nonfiction so completely that the author is even willing to go on a tour and say this is true when it actually isn't? No. I am recording here perceptions that I had. As I look back on these things that I record having happened, the ones that I remembered, which were extensive without hypnosis, before there was any hypnosis, are just as real as any other memories in my life. They're indistinguishable from real memories. And the physical side effects that happened were real. They said they were going to do an operation on my brain. They inserted a needle into my head, and there was a needle mark in my head. It was there. My wife saw it. I did react to this as if I had been traumatized. I went to the doctor, thinking at the time that I was crazy, expecting to be... I didn't know what was happening. I thought maybe I was... I had a brain tumor. I was horrified. Because, as you know, my work has been moving steadily away from thrillers and into more serious books with War Day and Nature's End and Wolf of Shadows. And I was working on a big novel about an American who grew up and lived in the Soviet Union and became part of the Soviet government as a real way of bringing the experience of being Soviet to an American audience. And that was, I thought, an important book. And this just interrupted my life. It was like an explosion going off in the middle of my life. It was that
but
startling.
Psychologically, you are open to psychic phenomena, aren't you? You
are not very. No, I wasn't very open to it. You're not. I mean, you use that sort of thing in a couple of horror novels, and you soon find out from doing research that the whole subject has got a very low level of talent connected with it. The people who write books about it aren't the best people. The people who do so-called experiments are not the best scientists. It's just right up and down the pike. You get the sense that the field is not grade A science by any means, not even grade B science, and a lot of fraud connected with it.
And not science at all.
And not science at all. And I wouldn't say I bought into the paranormal. I was pretty skeptical about it, and UFOs were a matter of absolute indifference to me. I'm more interested in the number of pages in the New York telephone directory than I am in UFOs. I was before this happened to me, frankly.
All right. Why don't you tell the listener some of the experiences, either real or imagined, that you had that led you to believe that something was going on either in or outside of your mind that may or may not have been there?
Well, on the night of December the 26th, 1985, I was waked up by a funny swirling sound coming from the living room. I didn't know what it was. It was a still, quiet, snowy night. And I sat up in bed listening, concerned and thinking I better go downstairs and check that out. That's a strange sound. And it was very odd. No sooner had I sat up in bed than I saw a small figure, about 3.5 to 4 feet tall, peep around the bedroom door, wearing a flat, very wide-brimmed hat, helmet, rather, and an oblong shield on its chest. And I thought, how interesting, I'm dreaming. I'm awake, but I'm still dreaming. My dreams have not stopped, even though I'm awake. And it flitted through my mind, what a funny dream. Then, I hadn't even finished that, the door flew open, and the being came rushing into the room, followed by dozens of other ones in dark blue uniforms. And the one with the shield on made a sort of semaphore gesture. Like I had been programmed, I leaped out of bed, threw off my pajamas as fast as I could. They swept me off my feet and started taking me out of the room. I began to struggle, and they began placing a thing against the side of my head that anesthetized me. This is how this started. And I remember this as if it happened to me in real life.
But dreams can be vivid, can't they?
Not like this, I don't think.
You're absolutely convinced this happened.
I am convinced that something that we don't understand yet happened. I'm convinced of that. I mean, that's why I wrote a book. If I had thought that this was just a dream state, or even if it was a temporal lobe epilepsy or some state that produces vivid hallucinations, believe me, I would have kept it to myself. I don't need to be the author that thinks he was taken aboard a UFO by little men, believe me.
Well, it takes more than that one episode to create a book.
Yes.
What other events happened?
Well, that happened on December the 26th. I went through a process of first, once I was brought back from the craft, I had some confusion for the next couple of days because I couldn't understand what had happened to me. I knew something had. Eventually, the memories gelled more clearly, and I thought I was going crazy. There followed a period of sort of denial where I thought, well, perhaps I'd better just try to put this out of my mind. It was an episode, a strange episode. There are physical side effects, but surely this can't be real. It mustn't. It just couldn't be. That didn't work. I felt very uncomfortable, so a few weeks after that, I went to the doctor, told him the story, and he was actually the first person that brought the UFO thing into focus when he said, well, sounds to me like you're telling me you were taken aboard a flying saucer by little men. And I was terribly embarrassed because it's true. That's what it sounded like. So I said, yeah, it does, doesn't it, Tom? And he said, I said, what should I do? And he said, I think you should see a psychiatrist, obviously. So I did. I found a psychiatrist through a lovely man named Bud Hopkins, who's after my doctor said this, I went home and I read a book about UFOs because I thought maybe I could find some more information if this had ever happened to anyone else, for example. And in the book, they mentioned something called the typical abduction scenario, and my case fit it to a T. So I called the researcher that they mentioned, a fellow named Bud Hopkins, most interesting individual, because he collects stories from people like who has this have happened to them. I found out from him that it happens to a lot of people. They have this experience. He wanted to put me under hypnosis, but I demurred and said I would prefer to deal with a psychiatric professional because I was not buying into the UFO thing when I saw him. I'm still not at all sure that's what this is. And I felt no desire to get involved with people who were certain I had been aboard a UFO. And so the doctor I went to is very open-minded about it, let me put it that way. Because I also didn't want someone who was going to tell me that this was just an ordinary hallucinatory state, but because one thing this is not, it's not ordinary experience, absolutely not.
So you did go through a series of hypnotic visits. What did they tell you? What did you learn from them?
Well, about the December 26th experience, I relived it pretty much as I've described it, and I, in addition to the material that happened while I was aboard the supposed craft, I relived that in more vivid detail, but nothing, there wasn't anything that emerged that I hadn't remembered too much. However, there was an incident that took place in our cabin on October the 4th of 1985. And Bud Hopkins had asked me, Whitley, is there anything else in your past that would suggest that this may have ever, anything like this may have ever happened to you before? I said, absolutely not. Except I thought to myself, well, wait a minute, what about that night we had in the cabin where there were all those lights? And I thought, ah, this is great, because that night we had house guests. And we didn't say anything about this the next morning, but it was a night of great disturbance where there were huge periods where enormous light was around the house. And I, to the point where I thought the house was burning down, and had gotten up to get my family out, there was an explosion inside the house that woke me, my wife up, and our son up, and he was screaming when he awakened. He was terrified by something that he wouldn't talk about. So, and they had these two house guests in there, and so I thought to myself, well, I will ask them about that night and see what happened. I asked them. They remembered it vividly. They said they had been awakened at 4:30 in the morning by a light so bright outside they thought they'd overslept, and it was full sunlight. It was that bright. The whole woods lit up like day. The man started to get up and found he couldn't move out of the bed. Couldn't seem to get up. The woman heard little feet scurrying across the floor of our bedroom upstairs, as if something small was racing out of the house right after this explosion took place. And Don, she assumed it was our cats, but our cats weren't there. Even as I tell you this, I'm just flabbergasted again, because doesn't this sound like real experience? It sounds like there was something there, doesn't it?
Sounds like there was something there, but not necessarily something psychic.
No, it sounds like something physical was
something
there.
Physical, right?
Yeah.
Something physical that was
so,
not explained.
That's exactly my point. The book is about a true, unexplained experience with witnesses and all kinds of different physical corroboration that it really happened, a lot of work with some very fine scientists and doctors, and the net result of it is we don't know what happened.
But the hypnosis that you went through, it also probed your past even further into your childhood, didn't it?
Well, that was another strange thing about it. Under hypnosis, I spontaneously regressed to the year 1957. They were asking me to look at the face of the being I had seen, the face that's on the cover of Communion, that big dark eyes and very thin face. Suddenly, the doctor, who's done this many times, noticed a change in my tone of voice. He didn't say anything about this to me. And he said, "How old are you?" And I remember hearing my own voice under hypnosis. My eyes were closed, and I heard this little voice suddenly say, 12, in a little Texas accent like I had when I was a little boy. Fantastically, I then relived an experience that had happened when I was 12. It's almost beyond belief. Whether this is real or my mind trying to make sense of the nonsensical, I just don't know. But I will say that one of the experiences that I remembered from the past under hypnosis involved one of these craft coming across a vacant lot where my sister and I and some friends were camping out one night. After I had that hypnosis session, I phoned my sister up and I said, I want to ask you a question. What is the strangest thing you remember from my childhood? She said, oh, that's easy. The night the fireball came across the back lot. And there it was. Whatever this is, it has a very real physical part that's outside, I think, of the individual perceiving it. And yet I would still say that in all of my experiences, I have never gotten hold of an artifact. They have never given me so much as a belt buckle from a UFO, nor have I asked for one. That might mean that I know somewhere in myself that I can't get one, because this isn't physical in the same way you and I are physical. Oh, it's an awfully strange business. Very strange.
Well,
business.
You have cited some physical examples, and of course, in the example at the beginning of the book, which may or may not be physical, although you felt some yeah. physical trauma.
Oh, yeah, there was physical trauma, but I mean, there's no artifact. There's nothing we can put our hands on and look at this thing and say, yep, this is definitely built somewhere in a non-human world and it belongs in the Smithsonian. That we don't have.
But why you, Whitley? Why couldn't these bizarre events happen to someone like me? Well, I'm certainly romantic. I'm poetic. I grew up a teenager in the 1950s on science fiction. I still have it all. And why don't these things happen to me?
Don,
why are you mystified by these things that apparently happened to you, but I've been left out?
Don, I have to tell you in all frankness, I am getting a lot of letters from people and about this, 8 or 10 a day. And I think it's happened to a lot of people. And I also think there are even more people it's happened to who don't have any memory of it at all. And it can happen in the way of having a little missing time, for example, as Bud Hopkins calls it. Or it can be something as simple and as small as remembering seeing a strange animal where an animal didn't belong. I'll give you an example of what I mean. There's one case that's known in the community of a man who was bothered by the fact that he saw a gigantic rabbit in front of his car at one point. And something about this strange apparition bothered him. And he eventually received hypnotherapy for it. Or therapy for it, and it turned into hypnotherapy when the psychiatrist couldn't break through this and thought it was a screen memory of some kind, screening some other experience he'd had. And on the other side of this screen memory, there were the same little gray beings that I saw. I got a letter a couple days ago from a lady, "Dear Mr. Strieber, I don't know whether I should write you or not, but I had a funny thing happen to me some years ago that's always bothered me. I was driving down the road, and I remember my car was stopped by a gigantic rabbit. And when I saw the cover of your book, I had a feeling that something about that face had something to do with me. And I thought I'd better buy it and read it. Do you suppose that this has got something to do with it, or am I crazy, or what?" So who knows whether it's happened to you or not.
Did you respond to that letter?
I'm going to, yeah.
And what are you going to say?
I'm going to say that if it really bothers her, I found help from the psychiatric community, and I suspect she can too.
Did you ever read a short story that was written in the 1940s by, I believe, Robert Coates? I'm sure it was Robert Coates, called The Hour After Westerly?
It's no.
Often anthologized. Well, it's an interesting story in which a man is driving through Rhode Island, and he is going through Westerly, Rhode Island, and he loses an hour. He doesn't know where that hour went. It just vanished. Something, and he was on the highway. Something went out of his life for 1 hour, and he knew that when he got to the point that he was going to, that the time had passed, but he couldn't account for it. It's a very mystical story, yet very practical in a way. And this goes back a long time. I mean, it's part of literature. And so you wonder about these things that can't really be explained in our lives.
But, you know, there's another story. The Willows by Algernon Blackwood that was just mentioned to me a couple days ago. I read it last night. And it could be a story about this experience very easily, where two people are rowing down the Danube in the flood in the spring, and things begin to happen to their boat. A oar is cut off cleanly while they're rowing, and their food disappears from the boat, and it's subtle but very, very menacing. And they see these huge indentations in the ground. And finally, the thesis of the story is that there are places on the earth where the veil between the worlds is very thin. And
now, have you been in contact with your partner, James Ganetka, about this? Is he holding your hand on this?
He calls it WSET.
WSET.
Right.
What's that mean?
Whitley Strieber, E.T.
Oh.
And,
so he's not that too sympathetic?
Oh, he's very sympathetic. We've been friends a long time. And Jim was, in fact, a prime candidate for seeing if I'd had, because I've known him, we've been such good friends for so long, I thought surely if this has happened to me, he would have noticed something. he does remember the state that I was in after a particularly bizarre experience in 1967 at the University of Texas, which may very well have been one of these experiences. His description of me, just in his own memory, was that I was, it seemed to him that I was more afraid than anyone could ever be, that I was absolutely so scared that I couldn't express my fear after this experience had happened.
These experiences and your obsession with writing this book, how has that had an impact on your family?
Well, obviously, you know, my son has had experiences with what we call the visitors. This runs in families, by the way. My sister's had these experiences. My brother's had the experiences. Our mother believes now that she may very well have had, or she's not willing to say that yet, but it seems as if she may. Other families, tends to happen to families in people in groups, suggesting again there may be some physiological cause for this as well as the external thing. My family went through a period of quite severe adjustment, and as I did, we all did, we're very close. And finally, we decided, we don't know what this is. It's not hurting us. I'm not insane. I've been tested 6 ways from Sunday, and I'm neither insane nor physically ill. We're all healthy. We're not hurt. What if it is visitors? Shouldn't we then just go for it?
Well, it should be stated that in the appendix of Communion, I can find it here. There is a statement that says very specifically from Dr. Donald F. Klein, M.D., Director of Research, New York State Psychiatric Institute, I have examined Whitley Strieber and found that he is not suffering from a psychosis.
Right.
So,
and you
felt that was important to put in.
Yeah, of course, because that was my first thought. I mean, you know, my thought, first two thoughts after this, I realized, got this thing put together in my head, what had happened. Go to the police or go to a doctor. Take your choice, Whitley. Either you're crazy or you have had a very serious crime has been committed against your person. When I thought of how those beings looked, I opted for the crazy solution, and I went to the doctor. And it just isn't true. I'm not crazy. And not only am I not crazy, I'm very healthy. And that's another thing about this that has to be explained. Whatever this is, I'm thriving. My family's thriving, and it happens to us fairly frequently. So it may be a fearful experience, but it isn't a disastrous one. It's not a catastrophic experience.
It should be noted that the being that you saw is you had an artist paint this being. And
yes.
The cover, I think I saw him in the, or her, in the Brother from Another Planet.
I've never seen The Brother from Another Planet.
You didn't see the movie?
No. Now, these are beings, incidentally. I found that the people started seeing these things back in the 60s. And most of the movies, the images that you see of these sorts of alien beings in the movies are based on reports that people began to make in the 60s. So it's hard to say that where this image comes from. Does it come out of our own mind or collective unconscious? Are these real visitors, and do they really look like this? And if they are visitors, then why is this so strange? Why is it so unlike what we would expect it to be? Why come to me? For goodness sakes, I'm a novelist. I wrote horror stories. If they're trying to communicate to the world that they exist and that they're real, I'm not the right one to choose. They should have come to Carl Sagan, or even better, Richard Feynman, a great physicist.
Well, maybe they will. Maybe they're in line.
Maybe they are in line. All I could say is that Carl Sagan's very, very skeptical, and Lord help him if this happens to him, because it's going to be awfully hard for him to live with it.
Well, I don't know what to think, Whitley, after reading Communion. I'm sympathetic with you, but I guess I have to put myself on the side of the Sagans, and mostly because nothing like that has ever happened to me or anybody I know other than yourself.
Well, I was in the same boat a few months ago. All I can say in reply is there certainly is plenty of room for skepticism on the one hand. On the other hand, this has been the most mind-opening and exciting thing that ever happened to me, and I'm very glad it did happen.
Sidney Sheldon was in the other week. First thing he said to me, he was debating with a psychiatrist friend about matter and where did matter come from. And I don't know why we started talking about that. We actually were supposed to talk about his international thriller.
Right.
But he brought this thing up, and I said, well, it's very simple, Sidney. Matter didn't come from anything. I mean, matter has always been here. It's part of the nature of the universe, because you can't create matter out of nothing. You cannot create something out of nothing. So it always has had to be here in some form. And he said, no, that's absolutely wrong. And so we got on and on and on and on about that. What all that conversation meant was that nobody could decide anything or explain anything. We just don't know.
Exactly.
Although I'm convinced about my interpretation of what reality is and humanity and the universe and existence, I'm convinced that I'm probably right because that's my theory, but I certainly can't prove it.
Well, I am not convinced anymore. What Donald Klein said at the end of that statement that you read part of was that Whitley Strieber has learned to live at a very high level of uncertainty, and that's the truth. And I find that I like it like this a lot. I think it's really a rich place to be for your mind.
Whitley Strieber, it's always nice to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Don.